Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the War on Chiropractic, Part 1. Now, the original battle with chiropractors occurred in the 1960s. And I'm going to share that story because it is not something for the history books. It is present and still happening today. You would not know that unless you look behind the scenes. But we have. And this original in-depth investigative report is there to inform you that the deep state and various characters within the pharmaceutical and medical community are determined not to provide forums or legitimacy to what they perceive of their enemies, meaning non-traditional or natural and holistic healing modalities. The chiropractic profession is the second leading healthcare field in modern medicine. As of today, there are 77,000 practicing chiropractors, approximately a 75% increase just over the last 6 years. And one reason for this continual growth and popularity is, well, it's quite simple. Chiropractic works. There are sufficient studies in the scientific peer-reviewed literature to validate this non-invasive therapy, which now treats over 35,000 patients. But it was not always as successful. In fact, until a surreptitious source working within the American Medical Association, headquarters in Chicago, smuggled hundreds of documents that confirmed that the AMA's secret Department of Inquiry had been orchestrating a strategy and operations to destroy the profession for over 25 years. If these documents had not been provided to journalist Joseph Lisa and myself, and then to the media, and then to the chiropractors who brought a lawsuit against them, it is my belief that chiropractic would not exist today. Again, why is this important today? There continues to be three forces loosely working together that continue an offensive to marginalize and ultimately discredit chiropractic. First, there's the online encyclopedia Wikipedia that misrepresents and denigrates chiropractic medicine. In effect, Wikipedia acts as if there were still the 1960s when chiropractic was almost abolished because it was called an unscientific cult. Second, there is Dr. Stephen Barrett, founder of the National Council on Health Fraud and Quack Watch, who carried out a 40-year career, a full campaign to discredit the practice and harass chiropractors. Barrett has continued his animosity toward chiropractic even after a lawsuit brought against the AMA found the organization guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade. However, never has Barrett himself been critically evaluated for his association with pro-pharmaceutical groups, nor in what we believe is his irresponsible and unfounded writings and statements by either the scientific and medical community, nor even the mainstream media. Finally, there is the AMA itself. Although the organization is restricted by law from attacking chiropractic medicine, it is still the umbrella organization for many American modalities of treating disease by physicians who oppose chiropractic. And they don't care that the government says you cannot call this group unscientific, you cannot reject communications with them or their patients. So they simply hold a grudge. Why? Of all the other non-toxic natural healing modalities, including alternative and complementary medicine, why chiropractic? Condemning Wikipedia, Barrett, and the AMA for promulgating misinformation and false propaganda, in my opinion, and of itself, doesn't tell the whole story. Why? Because the devil is in the details. And this is where media might offer on Tucker Carlson or on one of the other programs on MSNBC or network 5 minutes. And that includes the introduction, the host interjecting their own opinions, maybe having two people try to debate an issue, What in the world are you going to learn in such a short period of time? Nothing, in my opinion, that is of substance. That's why we're giving the full hour to just letting you know how nefarious, how utterly corrupt, how contemptibly in violation of just human decency and ethics, the membership of the AMA at its highest policymaking level that was aware of this, not only was it aware, but they actually, well, I won't tell you this story. You'll find that as we go. So we're going to take you step by step through this story, why this happened over three decades ago. It remains relevant because a culture of medicine dominance, favoring only one discipline of medicine that is held as sacrosanct. In the pharmaceutical paradigm, which has expanded to demonize those who question the safety and efficacy of vaccines and GMOs and factory farming and the health risks of junk food, the overprescribing of medications, the pathologizing of virtually normal behavior by psychiatry, is rampant. Unfortunately, this trend is gaining steam. Now, on the one hand, we will have the mainstream media that did not uncover any of these misdeeds, not one. Even when I personally sent my documents that showed up anonymously in manila envelopes with my doorman, and I sent them to different organizations, they did nothing on their part to uncover this. But then again, they're not the ones who uncovered the problems with DDT, Aldrin, Heptachlor, Copper Coil 7. They're not the ones who first exposed the dangers of living or building on Love Canal. They're not the ones who chastise American medicine and obstetricians, gynecologists for the dominance of the field in midwifery and said midwives are reckless and insufficient to the task of delivering babies, even though all the studies showed it was just the opposite. A nurse midwife was far more likely, if participating throughout the whole process, to see a healthy delivery was than an obstetrician. The mainstream medicine has always been on the opposite side. When it was known that cigarettes were dangerous, they chose not to attack the major seven tobacco companies. That was also true with asbestos. It's only after the fact. Only once someone is arrested, lawsuits are brought or won, then they jump in. Wrong time. That doesn't show courage. We also have what I consider a philosophical issue. And I'm going to share this with you before I get into the whole history of this. We are told that in an open and democratic society, we pride our freedom of choices. So no one comes and demands that we vote for one candidate over another, nor that we eat one food over another. They may encourage us, they may propagandize one position, but we still have the freedom to make our own choices. Not true in medicine. If you are a family and you see that your child is not benefiting from chemotherapy and you wish to try through another more holistic, approach, you could go to jail. You could have your child taken away from you, and it's actually happened. If you choose not to vaccinate your child, you could be considered an unfit or dangerous parent. Now they're mandating vaccines, not only for children, now they're breaching into the area of adults. And still, we do not hear the cry that this is an encroachment. We're also told by the mainstream media that whoever's got the best idea and it can be supported wins. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'll give you but one example of this. Dr. Martin Feldman and I conducted a study. It lasted 16 months. Every week for 16 months, a group of individuals who had brain diagnosed damage and were being treated by neurologists and other professionals, but without success. You could only get into the study if you could show from your doctor's report that you had not improved with their therapy. We had from people from severe psychosis and myasthenia gravis, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and multiple sclerosis. At the end of 16 months, we had phenomenal results that were statistically significant. We published an article, and we were invited by I highly respect a group of medical doctors and scientists to give a keynote talk on this in Chicago. We flew out. We presented our information, our results were handed out. And then there was a period afterwards where you could question or challenge the authors of a particular report. This was not in the same main room, but in a separate large room. The room was packed. There were questions of how was it possible to reverse Alzheimer's, but we had done it and we explained it. And one of the women came up to me, a doctor, MD and PhD, and a professor in San Francisco, and she said to me, I would love to know more, but understand, in California, we have to be extremely careful. Everything we do, including what she said she does, she has to do quietly because the pharmaceutical medical complex has infiltrated all the state agencies, the state medical examiners, and the boards overseeing, the medical boards overseeing your practice. So she said the irony of it is, in California, you could cure patients and be found guilty of fraud because you weren't using current medical accepted practices. And I thought, how unusual. So where are the journalists covering this? She said, no journalist is going to cover this. No journalist. And that was true. So understand that what you're told about how open and flexible, and as long as we have better ways, well, afterwards, I said to Marty, the proof will come at our next lecture. And the next lecture was a year later at a different medical conference in Washington, D.C. At that conference, there were thousands of physicians and scientists. I brought up on the stage a woman who had been in the support group and had advanced Alzheimer's, so advanced that she was being taken to a assisted living center for Alzheimer's in her home state of Indiana. She got up and talked about how she had reversed this and how her memory was back and her function senses were back and she could function in the real world. A young man got up and talked about how he was now outstanding student of the week in a very important school, and yet he had had full-blown autism. His name was Jonathan Ortega. His mother and father had, I worked with him. They were on a holistic protocol. He was completely normal. And by the way, today, he is in the top percent of his graduating class in college. Then we had another person who had advanced multiple sclerosis, completely reversed. His two neurologists could find no longer any demyelinization of his central nervous system, sheath, etc. People had never seen anything like this before in their careers. Afterwards, the hallway was filled, I'm guessing about 500 people, and they were all asking questions, so we got chairs so that the people could stand up and give their comments. We had brought their medical records. Anybody could see them. They gave us permission. And everyone seemed so excited by this because it was all done with just lifestyle, no medicines. I said, if any of you wish to communicate with me or come to my office in New York, I'll show you how this is done. Not a single person showed up. No one called. We're guesstimating there were 5,000 to 7,000 scientists and physicians there. One doctor said that that was the most interesting and exciting discussion he had had during the whole week of this conference. So the idea that because you show something can be done, if it's not a part of the prevailing paradigm, we in this country have a monotheistic philosophy that only one truth is allowed to exist. All others are collapsed under that dominant truth, and that is the way why we have made no major progress with any major disease in the United States, yet we keep fighting, quote, the good battle. Send your checks, get a checkup, and don't talk back to your physician. And that's what brings me in part to this. For generations now, organized medicine has been at odds with chiropractic. The American Medical Association, again, the most powerful organization of doctors anywhere in the world, has denounced the profession of chiropractic as quackery and cultism. And in 1965, they took the position that it was a violation of medical ethics for medical physicians to have any professional association with chiropractors whatsoever. Chiropractors maintained that by manual manipulating the spinal column, they could relieve pressure on a nerve, thus allowing the resumption of a normal flow of energy to an afflicted organ. The AMA's prohibition carried with it strong sanctions against any doctor who violated it, including the loss of hospital privileges. You could even lose your medical license. So by AMA decree, no matter what value a doctor may personally have believed chiropractors to have, it was all outlawed. Doctors who referred patients to chiropractors were risking their medical practices. In 1976, after years of efforts by chiropractors and professional associations to achieve a satisfactory relationship with organized medicine without resort to the courts, a Dr. Chester Wilk of Chicago and four other chiropractors brought suit against the American Medical Association, as well as 10 other medical organizations and four individuals. The five plaintiffs charged that the AMA and the other defendants had violated the Sherman Antitrust Act, personally damaging each of the five, not to mention all other chiropractors in the public. They accused the AMA of attempting, and here I quote, from an AMA Board of Trustees document, and this was presented at trial, quote, the AMA would first contain and then eliminate the profession of chiropractic in the United States, end quote. That's their own actual document. The chiropractors asked the court to rule that the AMA's institution and implementation of this policy hinder chiropractors' efforts to compete in the marketplace and to earn a livelihood, and it constituted an illegal conspiracy to establish a monopoly and unreasonably restrain trade. By presenting secret internal AMA documents, the trial exposed to public view aspects of the inner workings of one of the most powerful lobby groups in America. The chiropractors' evidence, which included testimony from medical school professors and other highly respected physicians, strongly supported their accusations. The evidence suggests that the AMA had over 25 years systematically attempted to undermine, isolate, and eliminate chiropractic. The trial revealed that the AMA had carried out a lengthy and vindictive campaign, sometimes public and more often covert, to persuade the medical community, the press, and the lay public that chiropractic had no scientific or clinical validity. Sounds familiar? What if we suggested that Wikipedia has replaced the AMA? And the beat goes on. The AMA succeeded in preventing chiropractors from gaining the same hospital privileges that other doctors enjoy. This had given many people the impression that chiropractors operate somehow illicitly or sub rosa. In fact, chiropractic is a state-licensed healthcare profession. Chiropractic colleges are government-accredited, and chiropractic patients are reimbursed by Medicare, Medicaid, and workman's compensation insurance. So as you will see, this would not be the case if the AMA had had its way. The chiropractor's charges were quite specific. The courts evidently understood this and eventually ruled that they are valid, and the American Medical Association stood publicly condemned, not only of violating specific antitrust statutes, but in order to eliminate a source of economic competition, of manipulating the delivery of our health care system in such a way as to deny patients the ability to freely choose their medical treatment. During depositions and discovery, more than 1 million documents were gotten that showed a systematic Chicago campaign against chiropractic. The lead plaintiff's attorney was George P. McAndrews of Chicago, and he summarized the decision that, quote, finally, at least in Illinois, the country's largest and second largest health care provider groups have decided to shake hands and work in harmony. That's not to say there won't be any rocky times during the period of reapproachment, but at least the professional and organizations will now allow each physician to decide for him or herself what's in the interest of their patients, end quote. After 4 years of taking depositions, the case was first tried in December 1980 and January 1981 in Chicago. A key issue in the case was the substance of the judge's instructions to the jury. One of the most important charges made by the chiropractors was that the AMA had deceived Congress and the public by secretly and illegally prejudicing a congressionally mandated objective, supposedly, study on Medicare reimbursement for chiropractic. The AMA argued in court that, like any other group of citizens, it had a right to petition Congress and that any such action on its part would not fall under the purview of the Sherman Antitrust Act. The judge hearing the case, U.S. District Judge Nicholas Bow, sided with the interpretation urged by the AMA and instructed the jury that even if it believed the AMA wanted to prevent chiropractic inclusion in Medicare, it must ignore all evidence presented by the plaintiffs that the AMA had acted illegally and in its attempts to bias the study. Following Judge Booz's instruction on January 30, 1980, the jury found the defendants not guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act. The case did not deal with violations of any other laws. Maintaining their objections to the judge's interpretation, the five plaintiffs appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. On September 19, 1983, this court ruled that the instructions given to the jury had been inadequate and sent the case back to the lower courts for retrial. In doing so, it commented on the evidence presented at the trial. It believed by the jury, if the jury was sufficient in finding a support that there had been a conspiracy among all the defendants in violation of the Antitrust Act, then it was legitimate. So the purpose of a new trial would be merely to evaluate the credibility of the five chiropractors' evidence. When the case returned to district court, the parties were informed that it might take a year or two before the case would come to trial. The judge, the trial suggested the contestants use that time to explore out-of-court settlements. Due to likely negative outcomes, two smaller groups decided to settle with the chiropractors, the American Osteopathic Association and the physicians members of the American Academy of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. Those that held out were the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, the American Hospital Association, the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Hospitals, the American College of Radiologists, the American College of Surgeons, and the American College of Physicians. However, weighing in favor of the chiropractors was ironically the Illinois State Medical Society, which was no longer willing to defend the AMA's policy concerning chiropractors. So let's look at the evidence. This is where it gets really interesting. In 1963, the AMA announced the formation of its Committee on Quackery. It quickly became apparent that chiropractors were the committee's main target. As a series of closed meetings it sponsored around the country issued a flood of press releases condemning chiropractic. There was little the chiropractors could do about this other than try to defend the integrity of their profession to the public. After all, the AMA had a constitutional right to express its opinion, right or wrong, subject, of course, to libel and slander laws. Then, in 1972, a book called The Public Interest was published, bearing the byline of William Trevor. The book contained what purported to be internal AMA memoranda. One of the memoranda talked about the program, quote, to contain and eliminate chiropractic, end quote. The authenticity of the document was not confirmed by the AMA. 2 years later, 1974, an anonymous source, humorously nicknamed him or herself Sore Throat, possibly the same person who compiled the documents included in the book, supplied packages of AMA documents on many subjects, and that's where we believe we received ours, because I wrote the first article. In fact, it was in Caveat Emptor, along the same time Ralph Nader was also writing for Caveat Emptor. Both of those are on my line, and you can read them. And then those were also given to other individuals, including U.S. Senate, the House of Representatives, U.S. Postal Service. Yep, they did nothing. The documents included internal AMA memorandum on the AMA's attitude towards chiropractors. These are the same doctors that that unfortunately would later come to regret their decision. One of the documents in particular led chiropractors to begin discussing among themselves possibly bringing antitrust litigation against the AMA. That was the alleged AMA Board of Trustees document. It states explicitly that the primary purpose of the Committee on Quackery was to first contain and then eliminate the entire profession, all chiropractors in the United States. Nor were chiropractors the only ones questioning whether the AMA's activities were legal. As a result of the release of the documents, a congressman asked the Federal Trade Commission to determine whether the AMA was in contravention of the Sherman Antitrust Act and if it was why the FTC had not taken action against the AMA. Eventually, the issue was again quietly dropped, covered up. Encouraged by these developments, a group of chiropractors and their supporters, despite the enormous risk of tackling a powerful, wealthy institution like the AMA, which can use its vast resources to influence public opinion and pay for lengthy, expensive litigation, they decided to pursue the matter. They formed the National Chiropractic Antitrust Committee. Its purpose was to raise funds for any chiropractors who might want to challenge in court the AMA and the other medical organizations campaigning against them. By 1976, five chiropractors who met the requirements and were fed up with the treatment at the hands of the AMA sued. Now, the chiropractors' complaint was what I'd already mentioned. They were saying that they were being attacked. And here's why the AMA called chiropractic a cult. The evidence presented at trial indicated that by 1963, when the AMA started its Committee on Quackery, it was well aware that chiropractic had become the second largest health care delivery system in the United States. The mixed chiropractors had broadened their appeal to include nutritional counseling and other modalities of treatment among the therapies they offered. As a result, the AMA did a study to find out how best to, quote, contain and eliminate the growth of chiropractic in America, and concluded the most important strategy was to isolate chiropractors from other health care providers and from public facilities like hospitals. This would not be easy. Many medical physicians and chiropractors, particularly in rural America, freely referred and consulted back and forth. The AMA began by instructing its state societies to remind their members that its principles of medical ethics required a practice of medicine based upon science, and that it was unethical to deal with any unscientific practitioner or with, quote, a member of a cult. This action was not effective because, at that time, the only practitioners the principles of medical ethics have been interpreted to ban were osteopaths, optometrists, and podiatrists. As you know, osteopaths are trained to put much more emphasis on the musculoskeletal system than medical physicians are. And optometrists compete with ophthalmologists, and of course, then you have podiatrists that compete with orthopedic surgeons for patient and foot problems. So the new economic threat, chiropractic, was not mentioned by name in subsequent interpretations of the principles of medical ethics. So in 1966, the AMA drafted a policy statement on the subject. Its wording was designed to apply a passage of the principles of medical ethics directly to chiropractors. The statement's opening sentence reads, quote, "It is the position of the medical profession that chiropractic is an unscientific cult whose practitioners lack the necessary training and background to diagnose and treat human disease." Now, parenthetically, it is interesting to note that the AMA felt called upon to define medical ethics not just for its own members, but as the statement says, for the entire medical profession as a whole. The crucial words in the policy statement are unscientific and cult, and it made it unethical for a medical physician to voluntarily associate professionally in any capacity with a chiropractor. And this prohibition was far-reaching and included teaching, lecturing. So if you were a teacher and a chiropractor came to your school and wanted in your class, you couldn't allow that to happen. So there's a big consequence to the patients as well. The isolation of chiropractors from other healthcare professionals has profoundly limited their education and the growth of their profession at that time. The AMA has acknowledged that chiropractic was stunted by its actions, as it intended. A chiropractor was literally not allowed to communicate with a medical physician. But such communications between medical professions is necessary on a day-to-day basis, as a matter of course, for the sake of patients' welfare. So here's the AMA's master plan. Perhaps the most telling document made public at the trial was written even before the AMA had instituted its Committee on Quackery. I have it. It's dated November 11, 1962. It was drafted by Robert Throckmorton, an attorney who was at the time general counsel for the Iowa Medical Society, and delivered as a paper to a group of medical executives. Throckmorton's proposal is an amazing document. It laid down a master plan for quite, quote, simply what medicine should do about the chiropractic menace, end quote. Before reviewing experts from the document, I'll tell you that Throckmorton's suggested efforts were, well, unfortunately not dismissed by the AMA's national offices at the time, as now they regret it. Not only did the Iowa Medical Society adopt the plan, but the AMA offered Throckmorton a job as its general counsel. All the rest of the evidence presented by the plaintiffs at trial seemed to indicate the AMA did indeed put into practice most of Throckmorton's proposal. The plan was to form an outline. For example, encourage chiropractic disunity, undertake a positive program of containment of this program. Successfully pursued, it is entirely likely the chiropractic as a profession will wither on the vine, and the chiropractic menace will die a natural but somewhat undramatic death. This policy of containment might well be pursued along the following lines. Encourage ethical complaints against chiropractors. Oppose chiropractic inroads in health insurance. Oppose chiropractic inroads in workman's compensation. Oppose chiropractic inroads into labor unions. Oppose chiropractic inroads into hospitals. Contain chiropractic schools. Any successful policy of containment of chiropractic must necessarily be directed at the schools. To the extent that these financial problems continue or multiply, and to the extent that the schools are unsuccessful in their recruiting programs, the chiropractic menace of the future will be reduced and possibly eliminated. Now, under the section listing conclusions, quote, the mixers may achieve their goal by emerging as medical men if organized medicine remains apathetic to this problem. Any action undertaken by the medical profession should be directed towards containment of the chiropractic profession, the stifling of chiropractic schools. Action taken by the medical profession should be behind the scenes whenever possible. Never give professional recognition to chiropractors. A successful program of containment will result in the decline of chiropractic. By the way, that's all in Trial Exhibit 172. And that's exactly what the AMA did. But then they had something really neat. It was called, well, let's work behind the scenes, surreptitiously, with the National Association of Blue Shield Plans that had over, and the Health Insurance Association of America, a trade association with 400 private insurance companies, to adopt policy statements that will not allow chiropractic insurance. Nothing will be covered. And perhaps the most influential of the AMA's political intrigues was the alleged end run it pulled around Congress. This is really something because it shows you how often this is done. And it did this in 1968 by covertly controlling, from start to finish, the supposedly objective HEW, Health and Education Welfare Study, on the subject of Medicare coverage. In 1965, when the nation's basic Medicare laws were passed, they included coverage for services of physicians, osteopaths, and some other health practitioners. Chiropractors were excluded, although chiropractors and their patients were avidly seeking inclusion. So get this. In 1967, Congress asked, hey, HEW, will you give us an unbiased study of the need for including chiropractic services in Medicare? They said, sure. What happened should have been anticipated. After all, 100 or so MDs work in the HEW, in the public health service. One or more of them might have been expected to leak to the AMA that Congress wanted a study that would not reflect the AMA's known bias against chiropractic. The AMA, and its internal documents reveal, was very alarmed about this study. They believed it had the potential to set the pattern for all health care insurance coverage for chiropractors for the next 20 years, and they were determined that it opposed coverage. The AMA had its own agenda for the study. It turned into a blanket denunciation of chiropractic as lacking scientific validity. But hold on. What's missing here? How would the AMA be able to control the outcome of a study before a single member of the study panel is selected? That's how much power they had. The AMA's Committee on Quackery went so far as to prepare an outline of the course of study so that all the people attending would have to follow what the AMA decided. HEW had assigned the job of assembling a panel to conduct the study to a special advisory committee. the Health Insurance Benefits Advisory Council. The evidence indicates the AMA immediately went to work on the members of this independent Health Insurance Benefits Advisory Council. In correspondence that I have between Doyle Taylor, the secretary to the Committee on Quackery of the AMA, who also worked in the Office of General Counsel of the AMA as head of the committee and Department of Investigation, and a Dr. Samuel Sherman, the AMA's representative on the committee. But hold on. The AMA wasn't supposed to have anyone associated with on its committee. That's correct. They lied. They stacked it. They controlled it. It was a typical committee in Congress. Taylor wrote, quote, "I am sure you agree that the AMA hand must not show at this stage of the proposed chiropractic study," end quote. This is 5 months before the committee even commenced on March 11, 1968. Sherman answered Doyle Taylor with a letter following an HIBAC meeting, quote, "Dear Doyle, there was complete acceptance of the concept of preparing the decision on the basis of lack of scientific merit," end quote. Hold on. Something's wrong here. How could you already have an outcome? Quote, "There is complete acceptance." That means people who have not even been selected for the committee have already been chosen secretly and coached and have agreed that chiropractic will be said to be lacking scientific merit and therefore shouldn't have Medicare coverage. 4 months before anyone was brought into the committee. That's how corrupt the AMA is and was. At least one future member of the panel staff was present at that HIBAC meeting and was given the AMA materials that Dr. Sherman reported HIB had already committed itself to using. When the panel was finally chosen in August 1968, it consisted largely of men sympathetic to the AMA's position on chiropractic. They hated chiropractors. For example, the chairman of the panel was a Dr. Donald Duncan from the University of Texas Medical School at Galveston, who at the very first organizational meeting of the panel, according to testimony of Dr. John Mennell, a member who eventually voted in favor of covering chiropractic, made a speech indicating that he was opposed to chiropractic inclusion in Medicare. This is before any evidence whatsoever was presented. And he was the head of the panel. Another panel member, Dr. James J. Feller, was a former president of the American Society of Internal Medicine. He testified at the trial that he had a pre-existing bias against chiropractic going all the way back to his medical school days, and that no one had asked him if he had any preconceptions that might interfere with his service on the panel. Dr. Fuller was asked by the AMA to keep it advised on the progress of the committee's work. A letter to Dr. Feller from an AMA representative requesting the documents reads in part, quote, "Dear Jim, as indicated in our conversation, it would be helpful if we can be kept informed as to the progress of your committee's work. Any reports or proceedings received will be quickly reproduced and transcribed and returned to you," end quote. And a blind copy was sent to Doyle Taylor of the AMA's Committee on Quackery. The AMA took no chances. They made arrangements to contact not only those members that they believed were soft, but even those who were already on their side, including the chairman, Dr. Duncan. Exhibit 228, dated August 23, 1968, is a letter from a friend of Dr. Duncan's, a Texas physician named William L. Marr, who had been requested by the Texas Medical Association to visit with Dr. Duncan and supply him with an AMA packet of materials related to chiropractic. Dr. Marr wrote, quote, "I called on Dr. Donald Duncan and talked with him concerning the chiropractic situation. He is most anxious to do everything he can and is completely sold on the idea that chiropractic benefits should not come under Medicare program," end quote. This letter, written 7 days after just the first organizational meeting of the panel on August 16th, confirms Dr. Mennell's testimony that Dr. Duncan had made up his mind on the benefits issue before having reviewed the evidence. Sound familiar? Think today how many people are accused without evidence. And we simply, now, we're right back as a nation to where the AMA was. There was ever other evidence of elaborate plans made by the AMA to contact and coach and supply a few panel members resenting the MA's secret approaches. One of them, Dr. Minnell, one of the world's leading authorities on orthopedics and a joint action committee member, said he did not like the MA's pressure tactics. In a report to public health officials, he complained, quote, "I was very disturbed in the past 4 weeks to receive two telephone calls indirectly, but from quite clearly inspired by the American Medical Association, implicitly suggesting what the tenor of my paper should be. I can only assure the consultant group that my conclusions are arrived at through my independent research, thinking, and experience, unaffected by extraneous pressure," end quote. Certainly, chiropractors should not be penalized simply because of the bitter bias of the American Medical Association when there is substantial evidence that manipulative therapy brings relief to sufferers and mechanical pain, which only manipulative therapy can relieve, end quote. That was a member of the panel. Dr. Minnell is his name, M-E-N-N-E-L-L. He also mentioned these contacts at one of the sessions. Seated around the table with him were the chairman, who had been approached, and other panel members, at least some of whom had also been approached. None of the other panelists mentioned attempts contacting them by the MA. Despite all these efforts to bias the panel, when the formal vote of the expert review panel was taken, Dr. Minnell testified at the trial, it was split 4-4 on the issue of chiropractic inclusion. He assumed that the vote would then be reported to HIBAC, and the panel would be left to iron out the differences. But he testified during the time between the formal vote and the presentation of the report to the parent group, Dr. Duncan, one of the panelists, changed his mind. And Dr. Duncan was able to report, as he had hoped, that the panel had decided against including chiropractic in Medicare. As if weren't bad enough, but the AMA had tried to control the panel from start to finish, HEW and the AMA carefully obliterated all traces of the AMA hand from Congress's view. All along, the evidence showed MDs at Health and Education Welfare had been collaborating with the AMA and the cover-up. Sounds like the CDC and Dr. William Thompson. For example, the AMA asked to be represented at one of the panel's public sessions, just as the chiropractors were. In an internal AMA memorandum, recorded a private phone call from HEW indicates that someone at HEW told the AMA not to testify. An AMA appearance would create problems for the report on Capitol Hill. HEW's final document, an abstract discussion, just as the AMA had wanted, of the scientific validity of chiropractic theory, didn't sit well with either the chiropractors or Congress. On November 21st and 22nd, 1968, a group of representative chiropractors had been politely, if curtly, received by the committee and had presented their experience of the clinical value of chiropractic for elderly patients. A month later, they were greeted with the first evidence that their testimony had been a fool's errand. Outraged, they submitted a point-for-point white paper to Congress rebutting the HEW report. Congress, under pressure from elderly constituents to get chiropractic covered, asked for a response from HEW. This was just the contingency HEW had feared when it told the AMA it was better off not testifying. Over and over in its answer, HEW badly asserted that in order to fulfill Congress's request for an objective study, it had prevented the AMA and other medical organizations from having any input, any influence on the ultimate report. They lied. The entirety of the HEW people involved in tasks lied. Not one was held accountable for perjury or obstruction of justice. These people committed acts that were illegal, and they were never held accountable. HEW chose to confuse Congress and the public by mentioning the canceled public appearance to conceal the active cooperation between HEW and the AMA on the study. And so it went. And that was just the first salvo in this. Then they went after the insurance companies. And the AMA behind the scenes was pressuring every insurance company in America, do not cover chiropractic. And so they chose not to. The National Association of Blue Shield Plans chose not to. And in fact, in 1967, the AMA Committee on Quackery had commenced work on the Blue Shield Association, the parent group for all Blue Shield plans in the country. And from the Committee on Quackery internal documents, we read, quote, staff will continue to maintain liaison with the National Association of Blue Shield plans in regard to chiropractic attempts to gain coverage under Blue Shield. Okay, so they're working behind the scenes to make sure that chiropractors are not covered. Together with Blue Cross, they're the most powerful insurers at that time in the country. Its boards are dominated by medical physicians. Therefore, Blue Shield cooperated with the AMA to eliminate nationwide coverage. A Blue Shield review of 1969 says, quote, we have filed and may use in six states an exclusion to leading manipulative services and subluxations for the purpose of removing nerve interference. Basically, the exclusion extends to services of a chiropractor by definition. Similarly, a New York Blue Shield representative wrote to Blue Shield National Headquarters on December 10, 1971, quote, I regret to report that New York State did amend the insurance law to include chiropractic care provided through the duly licensed chiropractor as part of the definition of medical expense indemnity. And so it went. Blue Shield policies then were very misleading. They did not carry a clear-cut statement such as chiropractic is excluded. Instead, there was vague language, understandable only to a lawyer, quoting the statutory language defining the chiropractic without mentioning it by name. Patients who thought their insurance covered all their health care expenses might go to a chiropractor and run up a bill of several hundred dollars before being informed by Blue Shield's computer that you're not covered. This exclusion, for obvious reasons, was very damaging to chiropractors. No one who can get a service from two sources is going to go to the one that doesn't have insurance coverage. Now, bear in mind that upwards of 90% of hospital charges are covered by third-party payers. Most services performed by medical physicians are covered by insurance. In this day and age, only a small portion of the public can afford to patronize a group providing no coverage by insurance. Many chiropractic patients, as I mentioned earlier, are elderly people frequently living on just Social Security. They have may have terrible, agonizing, and unrelenting back pain. If their insurance company tells them, if you go to the chiropractor, you've got to pay for everything out of your own pocket. But if you go to the medical physician or the orthopedic surgeon, your care will be covered by insurance. Well, to me, the results are rather obvious. And so it goes. It reported, quote, resistance to chiropractic payment may be indicative and that fewer plans make payment than the laws require, end quote. This would appear to be an acknowledgement that even though state legislatures had ordered Blue Shield plans to pay for chiropractic care, the Blue Shield Association, the local Blue Shield plans that were working with EMA actually paid on fewer plans than the law required, once again breaking the law. Now, I'm just opening this discussion up on the first hour of our report. On our next report, I'm going into detail about how they managed to keep chiropractors from even attending science classes at mainstream universities. Yes, they did that. And how they kept this chiropractic associations from having their own accredited, government-recognized association. And how they biased the media. There was no media that was favorable to chiropractic. Anytime you had someone slamming chiropractic, there was never a response of, let's take a look to see why you're slamming and is it legitimate. The media has always been complicit in promulgating misinformation by the medical community. So we're going to go through all of the other details on our next program. I'm going to end our program day with just a little insight and tell you why this is important. Back at the beginning of this whole battle, a lot of chiropractors were called straights, meaning they just did subluxation. But there was a movement towards including nutrition. I was approached by Dr. Chester Stock at New York Institute of Technology and the New York College of Chiropractic. And I was asked, would I create a nutritional protocols, meaning a syllabus, so it could be taught in school and be accredited. For a year, I worked on a detailed syllabus, knowing it would have to go through a rigorous examination at the Department of Education at the state level. In time, I received a phone call one evening from Dr. Stock, and he said, "Gary, good news. We're approved. We are now, New York College of Chiropractic is the first fully accredited state level school to teach nutrition classes." And I went ahead to supply multiple classes. Most chiropractors are not aware of that. They're not aware that at New York College of Chiropractic, and from there, other schools did the same thing. I lectured at different college of chiropractic, Life College and New York College of Chiropractic. Why am I concerned today about all this? Because look at Wikipedia. Look at their condemnation by anonymous sources where we have no knowledge of who they are and no knowledge of what their expertise or background is. Look at the effort to denigrate not just chiropractic, but virtually every form of complementary and alternative medicine. Now, you would think that if you're going to take on, let's take complementary and alternative medicine, there are thousands of practitioners, all of whom are regular medical doctors, most of whom are board certified. They're highly accomplished in their field, but they felt that there was something limiting within their protocols. So they started to study first, become educated on complementary and alternative natural therapies, might be even diet. And only when they were convinced there was legitimacy did they move into that new area. And then they benefited their patients. I've interviewed several thousand of them, and they all pretty much had the same story. You would think that before you criticize a person and call what they're doing quackery and fraudulent by extension, that you would interview the people, ask to speak with their patients, even ask with the permission of the patient to see their records. If you had diabetes and it was not being treated except for medication, which just maintained symptom relief, and now you saw this other physician, and this physician over a period of 3 months was able to help you with diet and exercise, get off all medications. And if you had done this with dozens of patients, then that would be an eye-opener. So where is the interviews with these doctors? It's not there. What about the doctors that have really good, strong proof of what they're doing? Don't look for it. What does the peer review literature and the library of medicine show? Hundreds of thousands of studies that what the chiropractors, nutritionists, naturopaths, dietitians have been using actually works. So you simply dismiss all that? You dismiss hundreds of thousands of studies cumulatively? Yes. Because you know one thing's for certain. You will never be contradicted, no matter how much you attack any alternative therapy, by the reporters of the New York Times, CNN, in fact, the entire media. You've got them in your pocket. You control them. You've got the medical community in your pocket, 900,000. You've got the scientific community. You've got the major institutions. You have members of Congress. You have the committees of Congress. You have all the major agencies, the FDA, the CDC, the National Cancer Institute, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Disease. You control all of them. So who then is going to drop a dime and say this is all a fraud? It's not going to happen. And that's why I'm doing this series. And that's why I've written 27 articles as of today. It's 28, challenging Jimmy Wells, challenging Dr. Stephen Barrett, challenging the skeptics in Wikipedia, because to me, my opinion, they're the modern day version of the Committee on Quackery. And they have that power. They have far more power to influence people with their opinion without expertise than the actual clinicians have in curing the patient. I'm Gary Nall. Part two, which is even far more damning, of the AMA and the groups surrounding the AMA and the media, on our next program. Thank you for listening and have a good day.
Hey, what's happening? Hey,
brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
like,
stop right on.
Hey, man, what's up?